Hi everyone, thanks for joining us today for another episode of Lid Radio Podcast. I'm your host for today, Asaro, and for this episode, we have a very special Lid guest with us. His name is Kevin Duncan. He is author of many concise advice titles. Welcome, Kevin. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you very much.
Fantastic. So as I said, Kevin Duncan is a business advisor, marketing expert, and author to many of our concise advice titles. Many of his best-selling books include the Diagrams book, the Smart Thinking book, and the Ideas book. His latest book and the topic of this conversation is the Intelligent Workbook. It's an interactive visual guide to assess your competency to problem solving and challenge you to further construct new ideas through visual and diagram solutions for greater improvements in all sectors of your life and work. So Kevin, we've given them a brief introduction, just a couple sentences to the book and what it's about. And the first question I want to go in is that in your new book, you combine a balanced narrative and visual thinking for problem solving. What are the differences of these two types of thinking? And why is visual thinking such a hot topic in the business world right now?
Well, I think visual thinking has always been an interesting topic. Whether it's particularly hot right now is, I guess, up for discussion. So to give you an example, where I started on all this visual stuff was way back in 2012. And that's when I started researching the Diagrams book. And what I didn't know until it came out was that there's an entire world market in visual thinking. And so that sold a huge number of copies, that book. And then it came back to me in over 15 different translations. So that essentially told me that visual interpretation of stuff travels fantastically around the world, whereas, of course, linguistically, words are more complex because, for a start, you have to understand the language and it takes longer to express yourself and longer for the other person to understand what you're saying. So when you draw that together, I set myself little personal challenge, really, and that is to take the stimulus of visual thinking, as in drawing things, and then combine it with short pieces of narrative, stick the two together, and essentially I write a bit, draw a bit, write a bit, draw a bit, and that's the intention of the Intelligent Workbook.
You dedicate a whole chapter to planning, and we all know that planning is key for all jobs, but sometimes it can cause stress when unexpected events or circumstances that we haven't planned for occur and we quickly need to find issues to solve the problem. What would be your piece of advice for these situations, and how can we handle the anxiety of not being prepared for something?
Well, there's an old saying that planning is vital, but plans are useless. I think that one came from an old American general. The point is that you can plan as much as you like, but until what they used to call first impact with the enemy, you don't really know what you're in for. Mike Tyson, for example, said, everybody's got a plan until they get smashed in the face. And so the point that I make in the book is that planning is good, but your plan A is extremely unlikely to occur, and therefore you're better off having plan B, plan C, and so forth, which is a form of iterative planning that rolls along. Now, if you take that view, you will have thought ahead more than just beyond plan A, and therefore you will be better prepared. So the thinking about it prepares you well and makes you less stressed. Finally, I would say really that if people say they're too busy to plan or to think, really what they're doing is just wearing being busy as a kind of badge of honour. Whereas really what they should do is set aside 10 or 15 minutes a day to really ponder what's likely to happen tomorrow or in the next few hours. And then it'll be less of a surprise and a panic when something different than what you thought happens.
So focusing on planning, I want to talk about putting plans into action. There are occasions where we have a plan to follow, but we feel like all the tasks are important. Like you said, when we're pondering what to do, we may think that everything we have to do around that topic is important. So how do we know which one's actually priority? And when we are deciding the plan, how do we know what to start with and then what to follow on from there?
Right, so this is an entire day's training in its own right. In fact, it could be the topic of an entire book. So let's try and unravel some of the bits. First of all, it makes complete common sense. You cannot have everything louder than everything else. So a random checklist of stuff to do doesn't really help the owner of the list. They need to try to make some sense of that large volume of things so that they can establish priority. So the first thing to do, not surprisingly, is to write the whole lot down. And it's then the screening that you apply thereafter that makes things clearer and easier for the owner of the list. Now, there are lots of different criteria that you can use, but you certainly the speed of the task, the importance of it, the monetary value, the quality, the amount of time it needs, and so forth. All of these are factors with regard to how urgent and in what sequence you should do these tasks in. So really, once you apply those criteria, you should keep reorganizing your list until the most important stuff is at the top. And then you should also go straight to the bottom of it, and if possible, chop all the irrelevant stuff off the bottom. That's a thing I call task triage, which is named after the nurses in hospitals who have to decide who gets treated first. So it takes brutal discipline, really, to work out what you're not going to do in order to work out what you are going to do.
Another interesting topic which you cover in the book is presenting. So if we've completed the project and we're satisfied with it, but we need to present it back to the team or our boss or our client, and we need to make sure that they grab the information that we want them to retain, how can we make sure that they are efficiently presenting that information in the right way?
Presenting is really difficult. And of course, people have to sell in various forms every day. So, of course, presenting your case well is a vital part of that. And it doesn't matter whether you're doing it to a customer, a client, a boss, or even just a colleague. So, broad principles, you need to grab them with something really interesting at the start. So that's going to be an interesting figure, a strange quote, an interesting statement, something provocative, something that they don't know. We call that the grabber, something of that type. Then if you look at the shape of a presentation, the interesting thing that the data shows is that people remember 70% of what you say at the beginning, 100% of what you say at the end, but only 20% of what you say in the middle. And those figures remain true regardless of whether you're presenting for 10 minutes or an hour. So the bit in the middle, which everybody forgets, we call the bed of nails, and you want to get out of that as fast as possible. Whereas in fact, so many presentations are so long-winded that they get bogged down in that bit in the middle. So you want to get through that as fast as you can. So in summary, that is a strong arresting start, a really short middle, and then a distinctive and memorable finish.
Another question I want to ask about this book is the visual aspect to it. You're using visual and diagram solutions. Why is that really important? Why is it important that in our work and in our presentation, we answer solutions and problems in a visual and diagram way?
Well, a lot of this goes back to what you might call the original success of the diagrams book. First of all, I noticed that when I'm doing training and facilitating, if I put up a diagram, I often get a better response than if I'm just talking or if people are reading things. Equally, I noticed that students in training were migrating, if you like, from doing what you call old-fashioned longhand lecture notes in sentences to doing two circles, an arrow and a triangle, and that gives them the, if you like, revision notes and aid memoir that they need. So the thinking was already developing in that way, let's say, getting on for 10 years ago. Add to that now that actually people's attention spans have gone down from 12 to 8 seconds in the last 10 years, which, by the way, is some sort of evolutionary disaster. But essentially, people haven't got the attention span anymore. And so 10 years ago, it wasn't uncommon to write a business book, say, of 50 to 70,000 words and sell that for £10, and everyone was jolly happy. But now, some of the books that I write are no more than 2,000 or 3,000 words maximum. And people email me saying, "Thank you. I bought that at a station or an airport. And thank you for making it so short because I'd read it by the time I got home." So the brevity of expression of the material is one factor. And another, well, just interesting to me, but there's actually 250 diagrams in this book, small and sketchy, in a way that help you move your narrative on fast so that in just one spread, you can take an issue, explain it, do two or three quick visuals about it, and then finish up by saying, this works and this doesn't. And people, I hope, will be able to get that really fast, and it'll help them a lot.
In addition to that, do you just want to elaborate more on other key takeaways which many of our listeners will be able to take from this book and from the content inside the book? You mentioned that it will tell you this works, this doesn't work, try this, see how it works out. But what are other key factors that they should really focus on when they're going through the book?
Well, I really hope people will use it as a form of notebook, a little bit like carrying your notebook around as you do at work, usually with your stuff in it and scribble in it. And so in the main, what I've tried to do is make the sections really short. So there are five provocations or spreads per section, and there are 10 sections, and they cover all the elements that I hope reflect what people need to be doing properly in their work. So that's thinking, planning, working, doing, prioritizing, presenting, selling, negotiating, even progressing in your career. And there's a bit of joking and fun at the end. And after each section, we offer up just a little sketch pad area, encouraging people to draw their own thoughts there based on the suggestions that I make.
So I also want to return to another key thing about this book, that it covers all sectors of life, work and life. And in your opinion, how do the two interrelate? Like, this book is for both your working environment and also your personal life. How do the two connect to each other? And how can this book be both applicable to these sectors?
Yeah, so this is a conversation I often have with your colleagues, in particular, is to what degree is business the same as life or totally distinct from it? And we usually conclude that the two things overlap. In fact, I have the first spread in the book is all about work you versus the normal you. And I've got two separate circles. And of course, if they don't overlap at all, and one of them represents your home life and the other one represents your work life, then you probably find that the individual is struggling tremendously, because when they go into work, they don't feel that they can be their normal self. So I take that as a bit of a life philosophy and say you really should be able to be your normal, natural self at work within reason. And so usually we find that these things are indivisible. In other words, things that help you solve stuff at work should also be extremely useful in getting your general life happening, whether that's being organised or explaining something to somebody or getting your level of priority sorted out in ways that suit you, and just generally thinking more clearly so that you have a nicer time of things.
For someone listening right now who has a problem at work, they've got a problem, they don't know how to solve it, with the discussions we've just had and also with the content in this book, how would you tell them to approach the problem based on everything you've done and all the research you found in doing this book? How would you tell them to address the problem so that they can come to some sort of a solution?
Well, it really depends on what the problem is. And in this book, essentially, I'm addressing at least, let's have a look, 100 different things that might be a problem for you. So if it's a personal one in relation to how you get on with your colleagues, your customers, that sort of thing, there are a number of ideas in there that try to help you think more clearly through that. A lot of people say that they're way too busy and they're drowning and swamped and they don't know what degree of priority to give things. And there are stacks of ideas in relation to that. Also, how you negotiate with people, which is often your boss, and how you progress in your career, how you handle asking for a pay rise, giving feedback to people, all these types of things, they're all covered in here. And you can just read a quick spread on each and hopefully take a bit of inspiration from that.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Kevin. Before we go, for anyone interested in knowing more about you, more about the work you've written, and also about all the other titles which you've published in the Concise Advice series and all the other topics you covered, where can they find you, where can they follow you, and where can they find out more?
Sure. Well, I work on my own, and my company is called Expert Advice. So the immediate place to go is expertadviceonline.com, and all my assets are collected there. But if people are specifically interested in this book, then I tend to do a blog or website for each of the books that I do. So the diagramsbook.com, for example, was the origin of this type of visual thinking. This particular book, the intelligentworkbook.com, people can go there as well. And of course, I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter, and people can follow me there too.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for joining us today, Kevin. It's been a pleasure to chat to you. Very excited about this new book. It's a very interesting and timely topic, and I think it's something that will be really helpful to everyone in their personal and professional lives. And to all our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in today to LID Radio Podcast. Don't forget to keep an eye out on our social media at LID Publishing, L-I-D Publishing, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram for more information about new book experts, author opinions, and of course, more podcasts with other thought leaders such as Kevin Duncan. Don't forget to check out us here on LID Radio Podcast. I've been your host, Saro, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.